Are you in your 20s, or do you love someone who is? Then you'll want to pay attention to these big ideas from the new book, The 20-Something Treatment, A Revolutionary Remedy for an Uncertain Age by Meg Jay. Meg is on the faculty of the University of Virginia and in private practice as a developmental clinical psychologist specializing in 20-somethings. In her book, she observes that many in this age group suffer complex mental health problems, including anxiety and substance abuse, that call for our attention. Here she is to share five of her key insights about what she calls the defining decade.
Hi, I'm Meg Jay, author of The 20-Something Treatment, a revolutionary remedy for an uncertain age. What's revolutionary about The 20-Something Treatment is that it's the first book to offer precision medicine for young adult mental health. The big idea is that young adults need an age-specific approach that advocates for context over criticism, development over diagnosis, and skills over pills. The 20-something treatment offers data-driven help and hope for young adults everywhere and for those who care about them. This is important because so many 20-somethings are struggling. 50% say they are anxious, 40% feel depressed, 30% feel suicidal, and 20% have problems with substance use. Yet, as a culture, we are not sure what to think or do about it. Perhaps, it is said, young adults are snowflakes who melt when life turns up the heat. Or maybe some argue they're triggered for no reason at all. Yet, even as we trivialize 20-something struggles, we are quick to pathologize them and to hand out diagnoses and medications. Mental health has never been more in the zeitgeist, as today's youth are the most willing in history to talk openly about it and to seek help. Yet what kind of help they find and what those conversations are matters. So here are five key insights that will change the conversation for the better. Insight number one. Our 20s are when uncertainty is at its highest and mental health is at its lowest. In fact, that's why I'm a developmental clinical psychologist who, for 25 years, has specialized in 20-somethings, because that's where the action is. There is a J-shaped curve that describes mental health across the lifespan. On average, well-being declines across childhood and adolescence and bottoms out in our 20s before rising in the decades after that. Why are the 20s such a low point? Because our 20s are the most uncertain years we will ever know. As adult milestones have shifted upward and now hover closer to 30 than to 20, 20-somethings now spend about a decade feeling uncertain about whether they'll ever be partners or parents or professionals, about whether they'll ever be able to own a home or pay their bills. The brain interprets all this uncertainty as danger. That's because, from an evolutionary perspective, it feels dangerous not to know what's around the corner or what's happening next. That's why uncertainty functions as what's called a transdiagnostic stressor, one that can make people feel anxious or sad or suicidal or cause them to reach for substances to cope. Yet 20-somethings aren't in danger, they're in their 20s, and that feels scary. It's ironic. Culturally, we imagine that the 20s are a fun, carefree time because people don't yet have spouses or kids or mortgages or big jobs, when really it's hard not to have any of those sources of safety or security or meaning. It's stressful to be working on all of those milestones at once. It's scary not to know if you'll ever achieve them. It's tough to feel settled on the inside when life isn't settled on the outside. Insight number two. Medication is not always the best medicine. As a group, 20-somethings are over-medicated and over-diagnosed. About 1 in 4 young adults are taking a prescription mental health medication. Antidepressants are the most commonly used prescription drug of any kind among adults aged 20 to 59. Yet young adults are rarely advised of the potential downsides. Emotional numbing, decreased enjoyment and motivation, weight gain, sexual problems, and dependence. Antidepressants can help people feel less bad, but they also often make people feel less good. Anti-anxiety or benzo use has doubled since the year 2000 and are second only to opioids when it comes to overdoses. Young adults are the ones most likely to wind up in the emergency room. In addition, benzos are habit-forming, which means they are addictive and should only be used for very short periods of time. Stimulant use has tripled since the year 2000, up even among those without bona fide attention disorders. Yet stimulant use in the neurotypical brain is counterproductive, leading young adults to work longer and harder, but to produce lower quality work. And quietly but quite seriously, prescriptions for antipsychotics are increasing too. Antipsychotics are now frequently layered on top of other medications as a form of polypharmacy. Most concerning is that the side effects and dangers of antipsychotics can be the most severe at all. Stunningly, the majority of prescriptions for mental health medications are written by general practitioners who do not have specialized training in their use. To be clear, medication is sometimes useful or necessary, but as you'll soon hear, 20-somethings need skills, not just pills. Insight number 3. Education is an intervention. I write books because what many 20-somethings need most is better information. This helps us normalize rather than pathologize what's happening. So your 20s may be a mental health low point, but that doesn't mean something is wrong with you or that you're doing something wrong. Here are some facts it helps 20-somethings to know. As we've already discussed, the 20s are the most uncertain years of life, and the brain interprets uncertainty negatively. 20-somethings will have 9 different jobs by the age of 35, and most are struggling financially. The 20s are the loneliest time of life. 50% of 20-somethings have no close friends, and 50% are single. 20-something brains are more likely to think catastrophically and feel negatively than those of older adults, and they have less experience managing those thoughts and feelings. 93% of young adults are going to be rejected at some point, and heartbreak is the most common precursor to feeling depressed. Our 20s are the years when we are most likely to use and abuse substances and to become addicted to alcohol, marijuana, and porn. They are also the years when we are most likely to cut back or stop. And over 50% of 20-somethings have not yet found a source of purpose. Normalizing rather than pathologizing young adult struggles is important because 20-somethings are especially prone to the nocebo effect, or the power of negative expectations. When we tell young adults they are disordered, or when they read online they have lifelong problems or will always need medications, we are setting them up to feel hopeless and helpless, right when their identity and sense of self is forming and just when they need to dig in the most. Insight number 4. Life is the best therapist, and it's affordable and accessible and right outside your door. Here's my favorite fact about how people change in therapy. The largest slice of client improvement, a whopping 40%, comes from what happens outside of sessions rather than from what happens in the room. Compare this to the 15% of improvement that comes from what you learn in treatment, or the 15% that comes from the placebo effect. In other words, although education and expectations matter, your mental health is most likely to be improved by what's happening and by what you're doing at work, at home, in school, around your town, in your country, and in your relationships. That's why, as a therapist, I'm a pusher rather than a puller. I'd rather push people out into their lives than pull them in closer to me. The therapy relationship can be important, but as I tell all my clients, if I'm the most important person in your life, then I'm not doing my job. Change might happen in your therapy session, but there are 167 other hours in your week that are much more likely to impact who and how you are. In fact, these skills are the ones most likely to improve your mental health. Learning how to work or how to feel more competent on the job. Learning how to think less catastrophically and more rationally or even optimistically. Learning how to be social and how to find and make friends in adulthood. Learning how to love and how to survive a heartbreak. Learning how to move your body more. Learning how to have sex rather than rely on porn. Learning how to change bad habits such as over-reliance on substances like alcohol or marijuana. Learning how to make decisions, learning how to choose purpose and meaning over despair, even just learning how to cook has surprising benefits for our mental health. Mental health gets better when life gets better and when we get better at life. Insight number 5. Your 20s are probably not going to be the best years of your life, and that's good news. Too many 20-somethings think their 20s are going to be the best years of their lives, and it's all downhill from there. In fact, it's the other way around. Remember that J-shaped curve? Your 20s may be a mental health low point, but more often than not, they're a turning point too. These are the years when, after trending downward, how we feel starts to take an upward turn. This isn't unrealistic optimism or magical thinking. It's a data-driven view supported by multiple studies in adult development, which have one consistent message. Life improves as we age, and not coincidentally, so does our mental health. Well-being improves across every decade of adulthood, from the 20s to the 80s. So does happiness and satisfaction, so do close relationships, so does financial stability, and so does meaning and purpose. This matters because it gives 20-somethings hope, and hope is an elixir. It's helpful and even healing. Young adults who have hope are less likely to feel anxious and depressed. They're more likely to work toward the future. They're more likely to engage in healthy behaviors. And they're less likely to think about ending their lives. It's the power of positive expectations. I tell all my clients, if your 20s turn out to be the best years of your life, then something has gone terribly wrong. Life should get better as you go. Or as a 20-something once put it to me, don't peak in your 20s. In closing, let me say that for 25 years, I've said I work with young adults because that's where the action is. But to be more accurate, I should say that's where the action begins. Despite our cultural obsession with how great our 20s are supposed to be, I don't know a single person in their 30s or beyond who would go back to being a 20-something. I say that not to mean that the 20s are bad, as much as I mean that the 20s are when life starts to get good. Of course, I don't know how my clients' or readers' lives are going to turn out, and that uncertainty is part of what makes working with 20-somethings so exciting. I do know that as you age, you will probably become happier and healthier simply because you're more likely to have and do the things that make people happier and healthier. You'll wake up not to overwhelming unknowns, but to whatever it is that you have decided mattered most. You'll open your eyes to a chosen partner or purpose or profession. You'll get out of bed for the children or the friends or the work you love. And you'll walk out your door into the place you've decided to inhabit or visit, at least for now. As you get older, you'll likely feel more settled because you are more settled, not just on the outside, but on the inside too. Your 20s may be an uncertain and scary time, but don't panic, don't despair, don't catastrophize, don't pathologize. The best is yet to come. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy the book.
Thank you, May. That was 5 big ideas from The 20-Something Treatment, A Revolutionary Remedy for an Uncertain Age by Meg J. Also check out our book bite for Quarter Life, The Search for Self in Early Adulthood by Satya Doyle Bayak. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.